Tristan Casas is good, the Chicago White Sox are bad, and David Bell got fired. We'll break it all down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Monday, September 23rd. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock. You can follow him on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. And if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below, join in the conversation with us. And Troy, crazy weekend, not only because I somewhat lost my voice. I sound like Batman, but Lego Batman. But just tons of stuff happened in baseball. And I think the biggest thing, or I guess the I'm going to call it the most explosive performance of the weekend, was done in Boston by first baseman Tristan Casas.
Here, though, and Hedrick coming in.
Swings and drives this one high and deep. That one's back there sailing. Oh, my! It is gone! Tristan Casas, 3 home runs today.
Wow. Seeing the ball well here today. Lefty, righty, doesn't matter. He's aggressive.
Casas has 3 home runs against the Minnesota Twins in the 9-3 victory. And fun fact, he would have had 4 if they were in a different ballpark. One of the last fly ball that he hit, 24 of 30 parks. One of the 6 it was not was Fenway. He hits a 3-run, like he hits one to left, he hits one to right, he hits one to center. Casas finishes the day with, again, 3 home runs, just absolutely dominant performance as the Red Sox took 2 out of 3 against the Minnesota Twins over the weekend. Looking at the wild card standings now, I think we've been pretty much on the side of the Twins are cooked, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you kind of look at where the standings are now, and you see in the wild card, the loser of the East, which is going to be the Orioles. I mean, that's just for sure. They are first. The Tigers are second. The Royals are third, and they're tied for that final spot as of now. Twins a game back. Mariners 2 games back. Do you see these standings changing in the final week of the season, or Baltimore, Detroit, Kansas City, is that your AL postseason wildcard group?
I think that's got to be your AL postseason wildcard group. Just the way it shaked out over the last couple of weeks, the Tigers are in an insane run. The only difference that may happen, Kansas City's lost 7 of their last games in a row. 7 consecutive games in a row, Kansas City's lost. But with Minnesota having the Orioles next, they play the Orioles next,
mm-hmm.
3. And that's not going to bode well for them with the Orioles trying to claim their ground.
Now, here's the thing. We say that Baltimore has had one of the worst records in the second half in all of baseball. They are 3-7 in their last 10 games themselves. And so I do agree that it's a tougher road. Like maybe when you have to go to Baltimore versus Kansas City, they get Washington for 3 and then they close the season in Atlanta. And Atlanta could be playing out the string if they struggled this week against the Mets. They've pretty much got to sweep the Mets to get back into that NL wildcard race. But it just seems to be very, I don't know, like it. Are we right to call the Orioles a hard team to face right now, just given how much they've struggled down the stretch?
You know, that is a good point. But they, with the talent that they have, they can turn it on at any time.
True.
So we also can't forget that. You do bring up a good point, and that is absolutely correct. But, yeah, just with the talent they have, at any point they could turn it on. And maybe being in the last week of the season, that'll light a fire under them and they'll get things going again.
Yeah. It's something where, you know, the Orioles, again, 4 games up for that final wild card spot. Feels like a lock that they're going to make it. The question's going to be, do they hold on to that top spot and be the 4 seed, or do they end up falling back to Detroit or Kansas City? Because the Tigers have been incredibly hot, 7-3 right now. Talking about a team that I guess has been hot. The Los Angeles Dodgers, they took down the Rockies yesterday in the series finale in Dodger Stadium, and they needed a little bit of heroics to do it.
This 2-1 pitch. Ohtani smokes one right center field. Ohtani is inevitable. Now Mookie Betts, fly ball, left field, at the wall, gone! Ohtani, then Mookie, let's go home!
Having three Hall of Famers atop of your lineup can cover up a lot of deficiencies, it feels like. And the Los Angeles Dodgers are definitely taking advantage of that. So, okay, couple things I want to talk about from this. First, Shohei Ohtani, because it's Shohei Ohtani, right? 53 home runs, 55 stolen bases. Pair of questions here on this. One, I wasn't sure 50-50 would be in the cards, and now you could have 55-55. Is this possibly the greatest offensive season in baseball history?
If it's not the greatest, it's definitely top three, and it probably ain't three. What he's doing is insane. And I also want to throw out, that was a great call on the home run of Ohtani. Ohtani is inevitable.
Yeah.
I love that MCU reference. It's perfect for Ohtani. But I also didn't think 50-50 was reachable at earlier in the season. Last month, maybe it was questionable, and then he hit it, and now he's probably even going to pass 55-55, and it's an insane season Ohtani's having, and it's one of the greatest of all time.
With a week left, I want to remind people, he's within two home runs of Aaron Judge for the lead in all of baseball. Judge has 55. To just think about the fact that Shohei Ohtani could have 55 steals and also lead baseball in homers is nuts. And you think about the Yankees, you know, there's not much left to play for the Yankees as far as clinching the division, the first round bye, and all of that. Whereas the Dodgers are trying to hold off the Padres here. You know, that game is surprisingly close. They have a 3-game lead. They face off for 3 games this week. So this is something where San Diego already has the tiebreaker. LA has to win this series. If the Padres sweep this, they're in a tie going into the final series of the season, and the Padres would have the tiebreaker. So Dodgers arguably have more to play for than the Yankees do. This could be nuts. The other thing I'm thinking about here, speaking of those two guys, is it possible that one of them gets 400 total bases? Ohtani's at 391, so he'd be on pace for 406. Judge is at 379, so he's on pace for like 394 or so. We haven't seen a 400 total base season since 2001 when four guys did it. Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa are the obvious ones. 411 for Bonds, 425 for Sosa, but Luis Gonzalez had 419 that year, and Todd Helton had 402 that year. So Ohtani could get 400. Judge needs a heater, but Judge could get 400. It's happened 8 total times since 1960. We're already pretty sure those are both the MVPs. If Ohtani gets 55-55 and 400 total bases, I do think, and I asked you and I didn't answer the question, I do think that solidifies this as the greatest offensive season in baseball history, despite the fact that he's not hitting, you know, 350 or anything nuts like that, real production. And then remember, he's going to add pitching in next year too to this. Yep. It is absolutely wild. Something else that's wild, but in a bad way, the Chicago White Sox, right? They lost another game over the week. They lost their 120th game on Sunday. They are now tied with the 1962 Mets for the most single season losses in the modern era. They have six games left this year. The Angels and the Tigers. Tigers have been red hot. Angels have not, obviously. But they have to win all six to not have the most losses in baseball history in a season. And they have not had a six-game win streak all year. What are you going to remember about the historic futility of the Chicago White Sox?
The thing that sticks out to me the most, and it could just be recency bias, is the front office coming out and saying they're going to cut payroll going into next year after assuredly losing the most games in a single season in the history of baseball. And what's even crazier is that Mets team was an expansion team.
Yeah.
And they lost the most games in baseball. My wife actually asked me this yesterday. We were talking about it. And she asked me who was the only non-expansion team to have the most losses in baseball. And it was the 2001 Tigers. They had 119. So the Chicago White Sox have lost more games than any non-expansion team in the history of baseball. It's been a season of futility, and the all-around play, defensively, offensively, has just been atrocious across the board. There's really no other way to put it.
Yeah. For me, I think the biggest takeaway from this Chicago White Sox team is just going to be kind of like what you just said, just how bad they were. Like, this didn't look like a major league team. I've seen teams that were bad, but they looked like they belonged in Major League Baseball, right? Like, they could still, you could get a good outing from a starting pitcher. You could see a batter dominate. This team has just been awful in every regard. And like you said, cutting payroll just kind of makes you think, I don't know how you're going to get this any better, how you're going to fix this in the next season or two. And it comes at the worst possible time because the new anti-tanking rules with the draft lottery, they're going to set a record for most losses in a season, and they can't pick inside the top 10 next year because they're a large market team and they picked inside the lottery last year. And so it's not only generational losing, but it's losing and not even getting the traditional benefit of losing, right? And to hear that they're going to cut more money off the payroll going into next year is embarrassing. And part of me, we'll have to wait for the offseason, part of me wonders, is this finally the straw that kind of breaks the camel's back when it comes to Major League Baseball and tanking? Is this where the league finally does something more to punish or disincentivize tanking? Because even with them not being able to pick inside the top 10, you still saw them trade away their best pitcher in Dylan Cease before the season started. You still saw them tear it down and just run out the worst lineups you've seen on an everyday basis. And so, like, I've got to imagine that there's something the league is going to do, even if it's just privately pressuring the front office. There's got to be something that they do to try to improve, force improvements on this roster. And I can't think of another situation that's called for it more than this.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other thing to mention before we move on from the White Sox. As of right now, they are the only team with 100 or more losses this season. That could change. The Marlins currently have 99. The Rockies have 96. They're the only other two teams in baseball that could reach 100 losses this season. And the White Sox are 20 over that total with way more to come.
It is so wild how the talent has, not the talent, I guess, the records have all kind of come towards the middle. Right now, we have four teams with more than 90 wins. Yankees have 92, Guardians have 90 in the AL, Dodgers have 93, Phillies have 92 in the NL. And so it's hard to project very many of those teams to break 100. And then to your point, there's only one team over 100 losses already. You could see maybe the Marlins, probably the Rockies, maybe, we don't know. And then after that, the Angels are 63 and 93. I'm pretty sure they only have
six games left,
so they can't do it. So at most, you could have three teams with over 100 losses. And at most you could have. Actually, no, I don't think you could have any teams over 100 wins because the Dodgers have six games left. So it's just the parity feels like it's been a little bit more. The records have all kind of come back towards the middle, and the White Sox are still a historic outlier, and that's just absolutely wild to me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. 100% agree.
All right, jumping into quick pitch. The minor league season is concluded. You do have a little bit of postseason play still at some of the double A, triple A, things like that. But I do want to give a shout out to the double A Mississippi Braves. They have played their final game in Pearl, Mississippi. They've been there, I believe it's 20 years. It's either 10 or 20. But they are relocating to Columbus, Georgia for 2025. The city has already announced that a Frontier League expansion team is coming to use that ballpark. I believe it will become one of the better ballparks in the Frontier League, but no more of the Mississippi Braves. With the move, they are changing to the Columbus Clingstones. Clingstone is a variety of peach. You know, the flesh sticks to the pit of the peach, hence the name Clingstones. And this is a trend that we've seen where a lot of minor league organizations are moving away from the parent team's name to a separate identity. Are you in or out on minor league team rebranding away from the parent organization's name?
I'm going to say I'm in on it. If we didn't have the rebranding, we wouldn't have the Rumble Ponies or the Trash Pandas or the Jumbo Shrimp. So the minor league team names are fun. I like them. Clingstones is it's a little weird, but it's regional, so it works. But yeah, I'm in on rebranding.
Yeah, and people have to understand a lot of these rebrands, it's just based off of merch, right? You're trying to sell merchandise, and that's why, you know, if you're the Mississippi Braves, so many people don't buy your merch because they have Braves merch already. And yes, you have a separate logo. It's the M Braves and all that, but still. So rebranding, it's a merch opportunity. It makes you distinctive from the parent organization. And then also, if you're too close to the parent organization geographically, it helps the casual person not accidentally buy tickets to the wrong team. The Gwinnett Stripers used to be the Gwinnett Braves. They had that same issue, AAA for Atlanta. So interesting move there. Okay.
So how many of the Braves minor league teams are now right there pretty close to the Atlanta Braves?
So all of them now are within the state of Georgia with a technicality. The Augusta Green Jackets are part of the Augusta, Georgia metro area, but they technically play just across the river in South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Now, you can see Georgia from the ballpark. And again, that metro area is Augusta, Georgia, but technically they're not in Georgia. The common euphemism is all the teams are now in the state of Georgia. And I think they're the only minor league team that have all of their affiliates inside the state because so many teams on the East Coast have their single A affiliate in the Florida League or the Carolina League. This is something where you have them all in the state. The longest drive, as I understand it, is Columbus to Atlanta. That's around 2 hours. And I believe Augusta to Atlanta is close to around two, maybe a little over 2 hours. But they're all relatively close. And that's useful for Atlanta. They used AAA for a lot of their rehab starts, obviously rehab appearances for players. But when AAA's been on the road, they've also used High A Rome, because Rome is about 45 minutes to an hour away from the ballpark. They've used Rome for appearances as well. So kind of a big deal to them to have everybody nearby. Makes it easier to, one, go visit your affiliates. Alex Anthopoulos shows up to watch random starting pitcher outings and things like that at minor league ballparks. And so makes it easier. And I feel like it's a good idea. I just don't think it's doable for a lot of teams other than Atlanta based off just because of where they are.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. Moving from Atlanta north to Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Reds have obviously had a tough season. They got shut out by Paul Skeens yesterday, 2-0. Hunter Green returned, made the start, took the loss in this, wasn't bad. But the bigger news here, David Bell got fired by the Reds a season after signing a contract extension. Why? And how dumb was this move to fire David Bell?
Yeah, the Reds in general just tend to make some questionable choices. I don't think they should have extended Bell in the first place, but now with the firing of David Bell, hopefully they can make a correct decision and go after a guy like Skip Schumacher and bring him in. I think that he would be a perfect fit for their young roster, especially if they do give him managerial autonomy and let him implement his analytical approach and help develop those players a little bit better. But I think the David Bell firing was a little past due. I don't think they should have extended him. And just the way they went about it is very questionable, to say the least.
Yeah. So recap, they lost 100 games in 2022. They were in contention last year. And last July, he got a 3-year contract. It's not like they gave him a single year. They gave him 3 years. And then this year, obviously, they took a step back. You saw Elly De La Cruz blossom into a very good defender, leads the league in stolen bases, also leads the league in strikeouts with 200. Second baseman Matt McClain missed the entire season. Novi Marte missed 80 games for a PED suspension. Christian Encarnacion Strand got a grand total of 29 games. He's going to be going to the Arizona Fall League to catch up on at-bats. And then almost the entirety of this rotation, Andrew Abbott, Nick Lodolo, Graham Ashcraft, Brandon Williamson, they were all on the injured list. So it's he didn't build the roster. I don't think he's responsible for a lot of the underperformance, but here's the thing to me. Preseason projections. Fangraphs has Pecota. Preseason projections had the Reds at 79 wins. Right now, they're at 76 with six games to go. Like, this is what we all expected to happen from a performance perspective for this team. Injuries obviously hurt. I don't understand the decision to fire him unless there's things we don't know about behind the scenes. It just, the quote from Nick Kroll was, "We felt a change was needed to move the major league team forward. We have not achieved the success we expected, and we need to begin focusing on 2025. I would argue the success you expected is not his fault, and it just it's a weird move to me.
Yeah, no, you're right. I can see that. I did not realize that's what the projections were, but he does make some questionable managerial moves. It's you and I talked about it in the chat last night. One of our shared pet peeves is looking at the results and determining if the decision behind them or determining if it was good or bad based on the results instead of the process that went into it. Yeah. And a lot of his managerial decisions are kind of questionable. So,
yeah, I mean, it's bullpen management feels like it's never been a strength of his, and the decisions sometimes on when to pinch hit and things like that are a little bit odd. And I feel like that's an area a lot of managers get too fancy. I've seen Dave Roberts pinch hit for Mookie Betts before, and I'm like, what are you doing? So I feel like it's an area where a lot of managers struggle, but yeah, it's he could have been better. I think two things can be true at once. He could have been better, but it's still a weird move to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about weird moves to make, CJ Abrams of the Washington Nationals got demoted to the minors on Saturday when notably all the affiliates are done. He's reporting to the spring training complex in Florida because they played a day game on Friday at, I think it was like 1:20 p.m. in Chicago. He was seen out at casinos until 8 a.m. before a day game. So 5 hours before the day game. Is the decision to option down CJ Abrams, is this warranted, or would you have just suspended him and benched him for the final week?
I personally like the decision. From what I saw, Mike Rizzo said that he broke curfew by being out at the casino until 8 a.m. And Mike Rizzo said he's not having people break curfew, and he's going to make an example of CJ Abrams, who has been one of their best players this year offensively. And he's really started to blossom this year. I like the move, especially with it being one of their best players. It's kind of showing the young guys on the roster, hey, this is something you don't do. If we have rules set in place, then you need to follow them, because we have them there for a reason. We want you to be well-rested and ready to perform your best, even though we're not in playoff contention and there's only 7-8 games left. You're a professional. You need to behave like one. And so I personally like the move. I feel it's warranted. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it blows my mind that you would even consider staying out that late. And here's the thing. You've got casinos at home. You're going to be done in a week. Like, what are we doing here? You make enough money to afford a trip back to Chicago to go gamble in that casino if you want to. And it just, I know he's a young player. He's like 24. It's just like the dumb, simple decisions that you don't have to screw up. Like, it's a self-enforced error. I guarantee it'll never happen again. But it's just things like this don't make a lot of sense to me when guys do dumb stuff like this. And so I'm glad he got optioned down. I don't really think it matters optioning him down or benching him, although I do like the fact that he can't even be around the team. Part of me wonders, would it be worse for him to be in the dugout, but not like, maybe they option him down, but keep him on the taxi squad. He has to travel, but he can't leave his room and he can't play. Or is it worse that he's just banished to Florida for a week? I don't know. But either way, I do think it's just a dumb move on his part.
Absolutely.
Talking about professionals, though, let's give some flowers to Emmanuel Clase. Okay. We already knew he was one of the best relievers in the sport. Like, that's not debatable. But this season, 0.63 ERA across 71 in the third innings, 71 appearances. And he has 46 saves. He's one behind Ryan Helsley for the MLB lead. There's a couple interesting things here. If he pulls ahead of Helsley, he'll be the first pitcher to lead the majors in saves for three consecutive seasons since saves became a stat in 1969. Wow. He had 42 in 22. He had 44 in 23. And then again, 46 right now with six games left. So that's wild. But then also listen to this. If his ERA stays below 0.75, which it feels like it's going to, he would be only the fourth pitcher in history with an ERA of 0.75 or lower after pitching 50 or more innings. And listen to this list. Rob Murphy, 1986, Dennis Eckersley, 1990, Fernando Rodney in 2012, and here's the curveball, Zach Britton in 2016.
Wow.
It feels like Tarik Skubal, who is going to have the AL Triple Crown, is going to win the Cy Young Award. Is there anybody more deserving of a second place finish than Emmanuel Clase?
No, not at all. Emmanuel Clase, what he's doing is just absolutely insane. I think that he 100% should be the second place finisher for the Cy Young. And honestly, he might even take a couple of first place votes away from Tarik Skubal, which I agree with you. Tarik Skubal is going to be the American League Cy Young winner. But Emmanuel Clase is, I mean, they're 1A and 1B. The only difference is the innings pitched.
Yeah, Skubal, 2.48 ERA, 221 strikeouts, 17 wins. He leads the American League in all three of those stats. He is behind Chris Sale of the Braves in all of those stats in baseball. Sale has a 2.38 ERA, 225 strikeouts, and 18 wins. All right, wrapping up real quick here on the Monday edition of First Pitch. This week, I already mentioned Dodgers host the Padres. Dodgers are up 3 in the standings. Braves host the Mets. Braves are down 2 in the wild card race for the final spot. At the end of the week, so last game's on Sunday, when we look back on Monday, which of these two series will have been more impactful in the standings? Dodgers-Padres or Braves-Mets?
I got to say Braves-Mets. I think the Dodgers are going to be able to hold the Padres off in the divisional race. But the Braves and Mets, if the Braves take 2 of 3 from the Mets, they've got the Kansas City Royals, who could be either out of the playoffs and on cruise control or locked into the playoffs and on cruise control. And the Mets have one of the better teams in the National League and the Brewers in their final series. So I've got to say the Braves and Mets, and it's both of them are going to be fantastic series, and they're both going to be all six games are going to be must watch. But I've got to say the Braves and Mets are going to be more impactful.
Yeah, it feels like that to me as well. It's a situation where you are like Atlanta does not have, or I guess neither team, Atlanta or New York, has the tiebreaker right now. They have tied in the season series so far. So the winner of this series gets the tiebreaker. And if Atlanta can win two games they'll hold a tiebreaker over the Mets, and all they have to do is win their final series of the year, provided the Mets don't sweep Milwaukee to get in. And so it feels like the winner of this series is your final wildcard team. And I don't know if Arizona is going to collapse like we thought they were. It feels like Arizona could probably make it happen. When you look at what they did over the weekend, they took 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee. Granted, one of those was a hangover lineup, but they took 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee. So it feels like you're in a situation here where the winner of this series is your final postseason team, and the loser is probably at home. And I just don't know if the Braves can pull it out, but we'll see what happens. Going to be a great week of baseball either way. There's only 4 games today, so they're all evening games. Missed opportunity by the league there to get some games during the day on Monday. But enjoy the games tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow with a new episode of First Pitch. So until then, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review on audio, on YouTube. Like the channel. Subscribe, hit the notification bell. Leave us a comment down below. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.